This holiday season, give the gift that everyone actually wants, Omaha Steaks. Right now, save 50% site-wide, plus an extra $35 off with code HOLIDAYGIFT at checkout. From USDA-certified very tender filet mignons and perfectly aged ribeyes, to juicy burgers and gourmet sides and desserts that make every meal unforgettable, Omaha Steaks brings steakhouse-quality flavor straight to your doorstep. Whether you're gifting family across the country or filling your own freezer, every box arrives perfectly packaged and guaranteed to impress. Because nothing says I love you most like a gift of Omaha Steaks. Skip the malls and the guessing. Go to omahasteaks.com right now. That's omahasteaks.com to save 50% site-wide, plus get an extra $35 off with code HOLIDAYGIFT at checkout. Hurry, this deal won't last. Omaha Steaks, delivering joy since 1917. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details.
Football on Off the Ball.
Yeah, well, look, I'm not being deliberately rude, but that crystal clear is you're not watching him enough. He's very good, particularly in La Liga.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Right then, I'm really happy to welcome a number one New York Times bestselling author to the show. He's been writing for a number of years about sports and pop culture for the likes of Grantland and The Ringer, amongst other publications. And his previous books include Basketball and Other Things, Movies and Other Things, and Hip Hop and Other Things. And his new book, Expensive Basketball, is already a New York Times bestseller. It is out right now. It is fantastic. Shea Serrano, you are very welcome to the show. How are you doing?
What's up, my friend?
Congratulations on once again hitting bestseller status. It feels that you put pen to paper on something and the entirety of the United States wants to hear what you have to say.
Well, I'm happy to write things that hopefully people want to read. What is this accent that you have? I'm very curious.
What accent? It's an Irish accent, Shay.
That's what I thought.
It's a pretty neutral one, to be fair. Talk to us about Expensive Basketball and what the concept actually means.
So the concept is a thing that I think people understand implicitly.
Yeah.
Without it, like, I don't think you need like a full-on explanation. And the way that I sort of present that is with a hypothetical that I put in the introduction of the book. And I say, if someone were to show you without any explanation at all, they just showed you a video of Ray Allen shooting a jump shot. They're like, here, watch this. Great, I watched. And then they showed you a video of Joakim Noah shooting a jump shot. And then you watched that one. And then they asked you, which of these two is more expensive? Right? No explanation, no anything. You would know, for whatever reason, that the Ray Allen one is more expensive. Like, there's no way to assign an actual value to it, but you would know that one is more expensive. It just looks, it looks important. It feels elegant. And that's what the book is. It's just like a bunch of basketball things like that, that there's no way to measure it. There's no number you can assign to it, but they feel important. And, you know, the book is 30 chapters long. Every chapter is like a different basketball thing like that, something that feels important.
You're trying to recapture basketball that can be measured by the soul as opposed to being measured by the numbers.
Yeah, that's a great way to say it. I should have wrote that in the book.
Yeah. Like, the thing for, what, like, there's so many different questions that I've got about it. Like, first of all, the idea of expensive basketball can be extrapolated to any other sport in the world. And I think it, like, brings us back to this primal idea of why we love sport in the first place, because it's all about how we feel in an instance. Like, one of the questions I had is, like, how does this settle the everlasting GOAT debate in basketball, for example? Like, how can expensive basketball shoehorn its way into First Take to finally settle once and for all the Jordan versus LeBron conversation?
Well, I think that's why it's interesting, because it can't, is the thing. That, like, when you're talking about expensive, it's just sort of a synonym for, like, something that made you feel something. Like, I noticed that you have soccer stuff behind you, right?
Yeah.
I'm not a soccer guy. I don't know anything about soccer, but, you know, 2006 rolls around or whatever. I remember watching the World Cup, around that period, whatever it was, 2006, 2008. I remember watching it and seeing Italy, the team that plays for Italy. And for whatever reason, I don't know why, my eyes are just drawn to the same guy over and over again. And I'm like, who is this guy? Somebody named Fabio Cannavaro.
Right.
I have no idea. I don't know anything about his career, but he just was moving on a way on the pitch that was compelling to me and interesting to me. And then you start researching and you find out, like, oh, that's why he's like one of the best defenders who has ever lived or whatever the backstory was. But that's like what we're talking about here. You watch a thing, you don't have to have any experience watching basketball to see a clip of like 10 players running down the court and know, okay, one of these guys, his name is Magic Johnson. Who do you think it is? Your eye would just automatically go to the guy who's like, oh, it's got to be that guy. You know what I mean? It happens in every sport. Tennis, I don't know anything about tennis, but I know when Nadal swings a racket, it looks different. It feels different. That's what we're talking about here. So there's no way, you can't like use it to go like, oh, this is the greatest of all time, because anybody who has that conversation wants to like throw a number in there. And this is sort of the opposite of that. You just go, I feel it.
Yeah. And like 2006 in that World Cup is, well, first of all, by the way, getting Shea Serrano to talk about Fabio Cannavaro is a high point for sports culture all over the world. So I'm glad we've had that moment. But 2006 is like a sweet spot for maybe people my age in terms of like nostalgia in sport. So where does nostalgia actually sit in your concept of expensive basketball? Because I feel more about things that are nostalgic. Are things from our childhood or from the prime nostalgia years automatically more expensive?
They will feel like that to like each individual person. There's like an actual scientific basis for this exact thing. Like around the age of 14 is like the most formative period of a person's life with regard to like the way they absorb pop culture, right? Which is why you have an affinity for like music that you listened to when you were in the seventh grade, or an athlete who you watched or a movie that you watched. Like that stuff just, because at that time, like that is the most important thing in the world to you. Like that's all you care. All I wanted to do was like watch Bloodsport and listen to NWA or whatever. You know what I mean? Like it just felt a little bit differently. So nostalgia definitely plays a big part of that. Kids who are watching basketball now for the first time, like in 20 years, they're gonna feel about SGA like the way that I feel about Reggie Miller. And that's like the cool cyclical nature of fandom.
Can you be too good to be considered in this category? Like I know, and everybody who follows your work knows that you're a San Antonio Spurs fanatic. Because Victor Wembanyama can do literally everything, does the sheen of being an expensive basketballer change a little bit?
I don't think it changes. He just gets he'll hopefully get a different designation. Like he will, in the best case scenario, end up in the like the LeBron, Michael Jordan conversation. Yeah. Right now, when you mentioned greatest of all time, like those are the two names that always come up no matter what. It's always LeBron and Mike. It's those guys and then everybody else. Everybody else can play for third place. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar can play for third place. Kobe, Shaq, Tim Duncan, whoever else you want to name, they're all playing for a place that's not number one. Number one is between those two guys. So best case scenario, if we could add his name into that where you have to say three names now instead of just two, I mean, come on, sir, come on.
Stephen A is getting rich as a result of that addition to his morning debate. When it comes to Tim Duncan, I love your chapter on him and the way in which you perfectly describe almost the reluctant nature that he would devastate opponents and opposition teams. There's kind of a gentle, nonchalant nature to Tim Duncan and his greatness. Yeah. Talk to us a little bit about Duncan.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Tim Duncan would do things on a basketball court with no ceremony, with no celebration. He would just go out there and lean on you and lean on you and lean on you. And then you break and then he wins and then he goes home. And that's it. Like that was his whole career. That's how he retired. Nobody knew he was going to retire. Like if you look at his career versus Kobe's career, Kobe's final season, he was like, hey, everybody, this is my final season. Come get one last look at me if you want to see me play basketball again. We had a whole season-long celebration of Kobe all the way up to the final game of his career. Tim Duncan, you had no idea that was going to happen. He just went into the tunnel after a game one day against the Thunder and then never came back. And that's, you know what I mean? And that's how he played basketball. That's how he, like, that's what he rooted his dominance in, was this sort of, I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to do the thing I need to do. And that's it. And so as a basketball fan, watching him for 19 years to know that you're getting that every single night, no matter what, every single night he's going to go out there and he's going to affect all the facets of the game. Every single time he steps on the court, that like that endears him in a way that, you know, only the very best players can do. You walk into every arena and you know the other team is afraid of your guy. Mm. They're game planning for your guy, and it doesn't matter. And that's like, I think that's just a really special thing.
Obviously, the success of the man and the greatness of the man is the reason why he occupies that place in your heart as a Spurs fan. But you also point out the connection between you and your father as a result of having an athlete like Tim Duncan to root for. And I think that's part of this conversation as well. Like, if we talk about nostalgia as one thing, it's the closeness that we feel with our family members when it comes to sports people that are representing, say, the town that we're from. Because I know you were born in San Antonio. Maybe you live in Houston now, but I mean, San Antonio was, you were of that place, and Tim Duncan is of that place, and your father is of that place, and it's something that connects you all.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You assign this sort of intrinsic value to a thing because you have these memories attached to it in your brain. Like when I think about Tim Duncan, my dad is the first person I think of just because of how many games we watched together. I think of how many like times we talked about him or didn't talk about him or whatever. But if you talk to a person about a player that they love, who's like a whatever sport, tell me about this player that you love. Inevitably, what's going to happen is they're going to start talking about that player, and then they're going to tell you, yeah, me and my brother were at the game, and something like that always happens, no matter what. Me and my buddies were at the bar when this thing happened, and we're all screaming and or crying or whatever it is. It just connects you to other people in a way that you maybe wouldn't have otherwise. Like my dad is like he said 25 words in his whole life, and 9 of them were about Tim Duncan. You know what I mean? We just would sit there and be together forever, and that's the relationship. But because of that, like you care more about Tim Duncan or whoever your favorite player is. You care more about them, not because they were like winners and they gave you like a chance to go sit at a parade, but you care about them because it's attached to this other person who you like, your life is sort of rooted in.
Yeah, and it's amazing how somebody like that can just hack open a whole new aspect to somebody. Like I'm not sure what it's like in Texas, but certainly the Irish male isn't exactly the most emotionally forward looking person out there. But sport somehow manages to get in on there under there.
Yeah, the Mexicans are right there with y'all. We're like not going to talk about this. Yeah. We'll never say the thing. But you know, I'm sitting here next to you. I remember one time my dad said, like, you don't need to know anything about me other than the fact that I love you and I'll answer the phone whenever you call. And I'm like, you know what I mean? Like, that was our whole relationship. That's our whole relationship now. I call my dad on Father's Day. I'll show you the log. The call is 42 seconds long. Like, it's just like, hey, what's up? I love you. I love you too. All right, see you later. You know what I mean? That's just what it is. We're right there with you.
How many of those 42 seconds are spent talking about the Spurs?
Probably 41 of them.
I presume your dad was watching Wembanyama last night. It feels that every time he plays a game, there's a whole new stats line that comes up about him. Last night it was 35 plus points, 10 plus rebounds, 5 plus assists, 5 plus 3-pointers, and 5 plus blocks in a game. The first player in NBA history to put that up. Again, for this conversation about feeling things, I had to bring some statistical analysis into things. How do you and your dad talk about Wemby?
The same sort of way that we would talk about Timmy and it's just in the, can you believe that this is happening, that we're doing this? Like, okay, so you mentioned that stat line with Wemby last night, right? This, like, nobody has ever done this before. That's was the thing that came out of the game. But after the game was over, when I talked to my dad about it the next morning, or, you know, I just came back, like I was in another interview talking about Wemby, like nobody is going to mention the numbers, nobody's going to remember the numbers. What we're all going to remember is the moment at the end of the game when he's got the ball at the top of the key and he waves everybody off. Like he's just going, I got it. Waves everybody off and then hits the game winning three. And you're filled with like, oh my God, he's the guy. He's Neo in the Matrix. I'm watching him deliver on the promise of his potential in real time. Like it's that feeling. Go watch the clip and just seeing him wave everybody off And everybody realized, oh my God, this is like, it's never the numbers first. The numbers are great, but they're always in service of this other thing. And in this case, they're in service of that feeling that he puts in your chest.
You guys have been pretty lucky as Spurs fans. I mean, to go from Duncan to Wembanyama in a relatively short period of time, a lot of fan bases wait multiple decades before they can claim to have two superstars like that.
Yeah, I'm glad we don't have to wait that long. And we had Kawhi in between those two, in between Tim and Wimby, we had Kawhi for a little bit. That, of course, fell apart. But yeah, having these like generational big men show up every 10 years or whatever, I don't hate it.
No, it's a good life. Kawhi actually is a good one to mention here in the context of what a expensive basketball is. And maybe this kind of comes back to the point I was trying to make about Wembanyama, that he's almost too good to be considered expensive. And you talk about the Kawhi buzzer beater against Philly.
Against the Sixers,
yeah. And the fact that if that's a shot from the corner that goes in after touching the rim once or twice, it's not as good as a swish. But because it touches the rim multiple times and there is that sort of complete unique nature to it, like it's not the perfect shot because it's not a swish. So its imperfection almost makes it.
Yeah, that's right. If we go back and we edit that shot and just make it a swish, it would of course be important. The first ever game 7 buzzer beater game winner. But because it bounces around, because it adds that extra like, that extra second and a half when you're not certain if it's going to go in, it makes it feel more interesting. It makes it feel more captivating. More. We just watched it last postseason with Tyrese Halliburton against the Knicks in game 1. When he shoots the shot, if it just drops straight in, that's great. But because it bounces in the air and you go, oh, he missed it. Oh, wait a second. Hold on. The place just goes, you know, New York, of course, caves in on itself, but everybody else erupts. Yeah, it just makes it a little cooler.
It was one of my favorite sounds in sport of the 21st century, those 5 seconds of that Halliburton shot, the air kind of coming in and then sucking out of the arena all in one fell swoop.
Yeah.
listen, Shay, we're completely out of time. Massive fan of your work. Expensive Basketball is out now. You can get it online. It's really worth your time. As I say, if you're a basketball fan, you're going to really love it, but you're going to find a lot of similarities no matter what your sport is. Shay Serrano, thank you.
Thank you. Be safe.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.